This is the CC Radio Podcast.
Welcome to the Countdown Podcast. We are going to review The Rock for you today. My name is Wayne.
And my name is Paul. Welcome to this classic review as we continue to await slash hope for some COVID improvements in the world. Shout out to all our listeners who are in still very affected areas.
Mm-hmm.
The Rock is a 1996 action film directed by Michael Bay, produced by Don Simpson and Jerry Bruckheimer. Don Simpson died during the production of this film. Story is by David Weisberg and Douglas S. Cook. Screenplay by those two and Mark Rosner. And it stars Sean Connery.
You're bashed.
Yep. I was going to say, if you were any doubt that you would get some bad impersonations in this particular
it's
review,
gonna be bad.
Let that be put to rest. Nicolas Cage.
I'm Stanley Goodspeed.
Ed Harris.
Damn you for making me do this.
Not so good, that one. Not so good. That one.
Michael Bean.
I can only do Hicks.
I was going to say, yeah, I like to keep this handy.
For Close Encounters.
William Forsythe, among others. Tony Todd, including Candyman. And Johnny C. McGinley
from Scrubs. Dr. Cox.
Yeah. The music is by Nick Glennie-Smith and Hans Zimmer. Nick Glennie-Smith obviously being a household name, like just like Hans Zimmer.
Mm-hmm.
136 minutes long. The budget was $75 million. It took $335 million worldwide.
Huge.
Wayne, what is The Rock about?
Yo, Nicolas Cage plays like this FBI chemical warfare expert, Stanley Goodspeed, and he is sent on an urgent mission with a former British spy, John Patrick Mason, that's Sean Connery, to stop General Hummel, that's Ed Harris, from launching chemical weapons from Alcatraz Island into San Francisco. Sean Connery has a unique knowledge of this place. And because he was formerly a guest there. And then, you know, Hummel demands $100 million in war reparations to be paid to the families of his slain servicemen who died on covert ops and stuff. And then after their SEAL team gets, spoilers, wiped out, Stanley and John, they deal with the soldiers on their own. Have to save the world. Well, San Francisco. That's the show.
Yeah, and that's a very good synopsis of what I think we'll all agree is a very good film.
Excellent film.
This is Michael Bay before he became Bay's almost a caricature of himself.
Pre-Bayhem.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. The edit points are still there. It's still frenetically edited, but nothing like the Transformers films, became.
Absolutely. So this is his best film, straight up. Boom, that's it.
I disagree.
Really? Yeah. What's his best film? Pearl Harbor?
Armageddon.
See, I know where
I'm
you
not
are.
Not sure what that noise was.
No, I'm thinking about it now. It's because, you know what? This hasn't got the animal cracker scene in it or any comparable one. So that's
let
why.
That shit go. All right. We all know it's a dumb scene.
But this one hasn't got a comparably bad scene, in my opinion.
Yeah, but it also doesn't have the heightened ridiculousness of that film.
True. That's
I mean,
true.
It has its fair share, don't get me wrong.
Okay. for me, this is his best.
Yeah, right? I understand that probably most people would fall into the Rock.
Oh, yeah.
Best. And then there'll be a contingent of people who would argue Bad Boys is the best film he's made. The first one.
Oh, man, not like this. This is me and Paul were watching this movie right before starting the recording, right? And we sort of stopped talking because we were just kind of looking at it. It's because it's a fucking great movie.
It's what you tend to do when you watch a film if you watch it properly, but we weren't intending
but
to.
But it was on in the background and it just stopped us from talking. So this is obviously a good movie. And even we were saying to each other, like, how much better is this than his Transformers right? It's because, you can actually see what's going on.
And yet the Transformers made squillions more dollars in this film. And I know there's adjusted dollars to take into account and everything else, but still.
You know what it is? Does he edit as well or does he just direct the edit?
No, because, but clearly he has a say in it because all these films have a style, right? And I think a director has some influence on the editing style.
Well, his cuts in like Transformers and stuff are so, there's so many of them. Even in that bloody Netflix movie that he just did, right?
No, Six Underground.
Six Underground, right? That's fucking shit.
yes, it was.
But it's almost like he's going, how many times can I cut in this minute? Right? And it's like, editor, you will now work for 10 days on this 1 minute scene because you have to cut 100 times.
Well, it's probably, this is a guess now, all right? And I've not worked on a proper film production, so perhaps anyone out there who's a listener who has, and I know we have some podcasting friends who are actually in
some
the industry.
Out there.
I would imagine it's a problem with excess budget because he has such a huge budget for his films. He can get coverage from seven different angles and he goes, I'm
going to use all of it. Yes! That's a really good point. You know what I heard about Michael Bay? I heard that he has a group of his old friends who are not in the business, and he hosts some sweet, like, kick-ass little party hang, whatever, every month,
probably,
right?
Probably with inappropriately aged young women in bikinis washing cars and shit.
Oh, don't worry about that. He's fine. It was just Megan Fox. He probably offered. Anyway, the point is, right?
That's not true and inappropriate, Wayne. Moving on.
Ah, shit. All right. Well, no, here it is, right? He apparently put on a movie one time for everyone to watch, and he found it a bit boring. I can't remember what the movie was, but he stopped the movie and he said to them, "I'm so sorry, that was boring," and felt really weird. Well, I've heard this story, right? And he actually feels bad when people are bored.
Of his own film.
Of anything. Even if he's in a situation and it's a boring situation, he feels responsible and has to cure it.
I can't imagine Michael Bay ever taking ownership of something he's done as being bad.
Yeah, probably not.
Too nasty.
You don't get egos like to be able to do this without that. But he was apologizing for someone else's film and he's sorry that he put it on. So I think
that's such a shit thing to do.
What? What are you?
I'm a director. I'm going to apologize for my fellow director's film because shit.
I think what he's doing is, I'm sorry I made the decision to make you watch this boring movie, because I feel that way too. If I give you something, I really want you to be like interested in it. No, and if you're bored, I'm like, sorry.
Well, sometimes we give each other stuff to watch, knowing the other person will hate it and laughing a lot at it.
But then it's like, well known. So listen, you're going to fucking hate this. Just make it funny. All right. So that's fine. But I think that's what happens with Michael Bay's films. He's so now he's older. He's so scared of making you bored. It's like there's no way they're going to have even a second to themselves in this movie. Cut, 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 cut.
Like, you know? I said, caricature of himself.
Yeah.
Like this film is 136 minutes, but it doesn't feel it. It earns its runtime.
Agreed.
There is enough going on, but there's also some compelling leads. And I think probably the real strength of this film, other than some cool action sequences and the like a great chase scene and, you know, the great storming scene and then the finale of the film, is that you have Sean Connery and Nicolas Cage at Cage Prime.
Definitely Cage Prime. This is his mid-90s action Nicolas Cage peak.
And then think of the second tier of actors that are here. I mean, in a sense, Ed Harris.
Yes.
Fantastic bad guy. We spoke about him a couple of weeks ago in terms of being a villain that
you can get behind. Absolutely.
His reasons and his rationale behind his actions are honorable.
Mm. Right? Honorable.
And he's not intending to actually blow everybody up, but that ends up being his lackeys that he gets on board who take over, right? He wants to fire it to give people a warning, but he's never going to kill anybody.
There is a huge flaw in his plan, which I have issues with, right? That's the only thing. It's like, if you're a statistician or strategist, general,
right?
Perhaps you might have thought ahead of this that they might call your bluff. Because literally, if the government calls his bluff, he has nothing. He should have planted fake dead people that he killed. And said, "Hey,
you're very involved now."
I'm telling you, right? If you're really thinking four or five steps ahead, right? Literally, the second the government pulls the plug, he's fucked, right? So now his guys go against him. Now he's really fucked.
But regardless of whether they pull the plug and they call his bluff, he's now garnered so much attention to the cause. This is not going to go away for the government anymore.
Yeah, all right.
So I think that's his background motive here.
Well, it's not like they publicized this guy is doing this for this reason. No one even knew a bomb was coming. So I don't know.
But, I mean, everyone knew there was a hostage situation. Alcatraz and the soldiers have taken control. And eventually that would come out. What's why? I mean, he doesn't demand airtime to describe that.
Yeah, he just wants the money to do it and then he has to disappear.
The word would have come out, basically. So. Totally. I think that, well, without saying, I'm guessing now that's his backup plan. Look, I guess it's 24 years ago, but today if something like that happened, you would have people interviewing every person that Hummel had ever known in his entire life understand what was going on.
So cool.
They would have dug and got there in the end.
Fair enough.
But that second tier of actors in this film, Michael Biehn, William Forsythe, Johnny C, David Morse, these are all great character actors.
Which one's David Morse?
Grey head.
Oh, that guy.
His honourable mate.
Yeah, yeah. Like
Ronk is goodnight, as you described.
Yes.
So all of them, they're all great, strong actors, very good in their roles.
Were they great at the time?
Well, I think they're all kind of up and coming.
They're definitely up and coming at the time.
Well, in the case of
except Michael Biehn, he's up there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose.
10 years after Aliens.
Yeah.
This is his last hurrah in a big budget sort of film.
Probably, yeah. You don't see it a lot. Very cool. Have you seen the cover of Metal Gear Solid, the game? Oh. It's literally a painting of Michael Biehn.
Like, is it?
Yeah.
I hope he got royalties from that then.
Nope. You can tell it's just slightly not looking like him enough to
Wankers.
Do it. Just looks like Hicks. Yeah. Anyway. No, that's cool.
What do you like about it so much?
I like about it. My favorite things about this movie, the scenes wise. First of all, these two guys, one old guy, one Nicolas Cage. Great banter. Great. Like, I love how badass Sean Connery is and how nerdy Nicolas Cage is. And like, sometimes Connery is kind of an asshole, but like it still works and it's good to watch.
Well, of course he's an asshole. He's been unfairly imprisoned because of what he knows.
But sometimes he's just busting Nick Cage's balls and it's quite funny. Why would you like me to kill him again? You know, that kind of shit. So that's kind of cool.
Losers. Go on, give us that one.
Hang on. What does he say? He says...
Losers are always whining about.
He says, I'll do my best. He's like, you're bashed. Yeah. Losers are always whining about their bashed. Winners go home and fuck the prom queen. I know it's a bad Sean Connery, people.
But I love it.
Me and the cousins quote this movie all the time. Like,
what are the other quotes?
Well, unfortunately, they're a bit un-PC. For example, when Sean Connery busts the glass and looks in on Womack, he's like, Womack, you piece of shit. I might have known. No, the other one is when Womack finally catches up with him after dangling off the fucking thing.
Yeah.
And he goes, cocksucker!
I like when they're dragging Womack up.
Yeah!
And he's like, you're going to pull my arm out, you fuckhead!
Yes, that's right!
Fuckhead. You don't hear that in Hollywood movies very often.
You don't hear fuckhead that often. That's true. It's very Aussie. Fuckhead!
And every time I hear Womack's name, I just think of that old band, Womack and Womack.
Remind me, baby, of you. I can't believe we know the same music finally. Oh, shit. And you know what? That scene where Hummel and fucking Sean Connery are just talking because they finally meet. And he's like, you know, personally, I think you're a fucking idiot. You know, that. But him going back and forth about the Tree of Liberty has to be washed with the blood of the... For two older actor guys, that's a great little fucking scene.
I don't think Ed Harris is that old in this film at all.
He's probably just looks old.
He's a guy who has one of the few actors or actresses in Hollywood who looks older than they actually are.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, exactly. And he's endured as a result because he seems the same for longer, if you ask me.
In some ways, although you see him on Westworld these days and he does look exceptionally old.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Maybe he's part Asian. Looks the same for a long time, then really
and
old.
Suddenly, bam.
Yeah, no. You know what's cool about... You know, this movie, right? Where another director would have just joined A and B, Michael Bay's like, let me see here. So there's a scene where fucking Sean Connery has to go meet his daughter. But he has to drive there, right? So car chase! You know, like anyone else would have just had that scene happen. And that's what made it cool. So, yes, you know.
75 is a big budget in 1996.
Yeah, and then San Francisco's about to get baited. Like, it's just like when I went to San Francisco in 2016, on the way there, me and the girl at the time, I was like, hey, can we watch The Rock? Because then we'll get to see San Francisco and then we can fucking drive around like that, right?
It's like when we went to Thailand, I watched the beach.
Yes! Oh, I love doing that shit, man. I love doing that shit. And you know what? She fell the fuck asleep. So this is purely a us thing, I think.
It was the beginning of the end.
Yes, it was. Oh, it was. Like, you know what? Maybe I'm doing the wrong place here. Cool. Is there any worst parts for you?
I think Nicolas Cage in his cageism here. I don't know. This might sound odd, but to me, he's a little bit out of place with everybody else because everyone else is playing it pretty seriously. Like Sean Connery's character is quick with a quip and whatever else.
Yes.
But because it's Sean Connery, he's still very grounded, whereas the whole, oh, all right,
yeah,
stuff from Nicolas Cage
exactly
doesn't quite work for me.
It doesn't. You know what? You know what I heard? You know that scene where he's playing the guitar and his shirt's off and he's kind of buff? There's actually, it's quite goldenly lit, right? He actually said this in an interview that I read, right? Where he goes, I went up to Michael Bay and I said, hey, listen, I want to do a scene with my shirt off because I've been working out and I really look good and I want to see that in film. And Bay's like, there's no fucking shot like that in the script, so fuck off. Right? Well, next day.
Obviously he won.
Next day he just turns up in his underwear and a robe. And then apparently Bay looks at him and goes, fucking all right, go set up a shot where you're fucking on this. And that's what that shot was. That's the shot that made it in where she told him he was pregnant. She was pregnant. Like, I was like, what the fuck? No, the worst part of this movie, okay, for me,
yep.
Right? And look, I love it, but this is the worst part. At the very end, he's talking to the Candyman, right? Nicolas Cage
Tony
is like,
Todd, yeah.
And he's like, we got off on the wrong foot. Do you know any music? Like, what do you think of the Elton John song, Rocket Man, right? I don't like any soft shit. Right? And then he's like, I only say that because... And this is contrived. He goes, it's you. And he looks up. You're the Rocket Man. And then Tony Todd notices he's standing in front of the rocket. Fucking Nicolas Cage triggers it. It fucking fires into him and through the window and whatever, right? And I'm like, you guys worked bloody hard to try and get a Rocket Man-like thing going on for that scene.
What quip can we have here for our action hero? Because this is the 90s and this is what we do.
I know.
Following on from the 80s.
Oh, God.
Jeez, you're right.
I know.
That is labored.
You know, I have this weird thing where if anything really bad happened, like I got mugged or something happened and I was about to do something like hit someone, I would love to do a 90s action movie line. Like, In real life, and someone heard it, it's like, yo.
So what did you do the time when you got so pissed off at that person driving that you threw coins at them through your window?
Okay, if I had to pick that one up, I'd be like, let me buy you a drink or something. I'd be something like that, right? Because I'm throwing coins at the window.
Here's some change for your next driving lesson.
There you go. See, you got a toll, you know, something like that. I mean, but if someone saw that in real life, they'd be like, yo, just before he hit the guy with the surfboard, he said, surf's up, pal. Or something. It's like, what?
Yeah, it just you're doesn't work.
I know it doesn't work, but wouldn't it be cool?
Wait, again, this is not a real
movie.
Yes.
Yeah, that was sure that's the only bit that I put.
I'm sure that's a YouTube series of videos right there. You know, living your life like a 90s action film.
Oh my God. Imagine the gravelly voice you would adopt. Imagine the squint.
You'd also need to have your lines ready.
Yep.
Yep. You need to have low angle sweeping shots around you at all times.
Then get fat 10 years later. Yeah, all that shit.
Super fat. Well, you know, hey, some action stars didn't from that era. That said, as much as Cage seems a little bit out of it, obviously, Goodspeed's a likable character.
Yes.
Mason is extremely likable, and that's how this film works.
Everyone loves, you know what? He had some cool wig shit going on there. He had a cropped... Sean Connery had cropped grey hair. Well, that motherfucker's good looking.
Yeah.
You know?
He sold that. That's a good hair piece, you're right. I was actually looking at Nicolas Cage going, is that his real hair, or has he got a hair piece?
Oh, no. No one knows what's going on with Nick Cage's hair. It's like, sometimes it's a bird, sometimes it's fucking, not there, sometimes it's full. Okay, I'm like, what is going on here? It's like Jeremy Piven. Like, he used to be bald, now he's really not bald.
And oh, okay.
Yeah, you can just, yeah, anyway.
Advanced hair, yeah.
He's had the strip surgery from the back of his head, that thing going on.
Strip surgery? What's that?
Okay, so if you're bald, I know this because I'm bald.
Yeah. I'll join you one day, don't worry.
Well, if you want to transplant hair, the old way they do it, I don't know how they do it now, but they used to actually cut a, 2-inch strip of the back of your head, the skin off, right? They would then fucking sew it up and make your hair, your skin stretch back. And they'd take that strip because it's got all back head hair on it.
Right.
They pull out follicles individually because that hair is programmed differently. It doesn't fall out. Yeah. And they stick it in the top of your hair.
Oh my God.
That's the baldness operation. And on some dudes like Jeremy Piven, if he's on the beach, there's shots of him. You can see the massive scar on the back of his head.
Oh, wow.
The idea is you let that hair grow so it covers the scar.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but then you're locked into having that lots of hair all the time. Otherwise, you're fucked. Oh, yeah, it's a lot of things. That's why I didn't do it.
So it seems like a very painful procedure to go through, but okay. Anyway, welcome back to Men Grooming Tips with Paul and Wayne.
The chicks out there like, ugh.
I didn't know that.
That's I know, the and the non-bald men going, ew. It ain't pretty.
Look, that's really all for me. It is a classic film. It's very, very enjoyable at all levels. It's for very us to still rewatchable
be,
as well.
Exactly. If you're liking it now, why can't this be a 9 out of 10? You know? You still enjoy it. What other movies can you say are like that?
Look, I know this is the unpopular opinion. I've said already Con Air, but of the three...
What's the three? What's the holy three...
It's Con Air, it's Face Off.
Face Off!
And it's The Rock. This is the least of the three for me.
Oh, these are the Cages, Cage films.
The Cage, the Cage.
The Soul Cages.
Cages? I don't know.
Cages-ons? Oh, yeah. No, the Cages.
Not that he had really gone away at this point because he was a serious actor, sort of, obviously one for leaving Las Vegas.
If there's a Cages-ons, it would have to happen now. He's already gone away. He has to come back.
Well, it's hard to have a Cages-ons if you're in 18 films a year and they all suck.
Now, I agree completely, but get this. Keanu did the same fucking thing almost.
No, Keanu was never in
18 films. He was doing a bunch of shit films for a while.
I'm not saying he didn't do shit films. I'm saying he was never in 18 films a year. No, all straight to video.
Doesn't Nick Cage have to pay for like a tax bill or something?
Alimony.
Is alimony.
Yeah, and apparently he was pretty close to broke at one point. But
how do you... Yeah.
Which is why he's in shit films with Elijah Wood that are made on a $3 million budget and some piece of shit film I saw late last year.
I saw it too!
Where he's...
He's like, open the door.
That one, yeah, that's different. No, I've seen way worse than that. He's like, he's like the owner of his hotel, and it's this supposedly kind of Pulp Fiction-y, you know, assassin trying to kill someone at his hotel, and he's protecting that person, and it's just garbage.
It's shit house.
Absolute fucking garbage.
See, for a second it sounded interesting, and then I'm like, if you think it must have really sucked.
Anyway, look, obviously this is back in Cage Prime, and it's a very good film. As I said, don't get me wrong, all three of those films I love. So this falls in the same category. I'll score it first. I'm going to give this a flat 80.
80. Okay, I'm giving it a... Why not? 90.
Yeah, you said 9 out of 10.
Yeah, exactly. I thought, well, I'll go a little lower. No, I liked it. Fair I still
enough.
Like it.
No, complaints from me on that particular score. So there it is.
Word.
A hearty recommend. Obviously, if you're listening to the show, you've seen The Rock.
Totally. Yeah.
If you disagree or there's something you hate about it, which really puts it into this, oh my God, The Rock, what the fuck are they talking about? Let us know.
Yeah.
We're always happy to hear dissenting opinions.
Yes.
And you can do so via...
And I get them a lot, let me tell you.
Well, you don't, jeez. Via email at thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com, on Twitter at thecountdownpc, via Podbean where we host the show, or in the Facebook list community. Link is in the show notes. And that's it. Look, we're still a long way away, I think, from a new release film coming out at the cinema. So these classic films are going to continue. Though next week, we have a new one.
New one.
Yeah. Charlize Theron action film, which is coming to Netflix, The Old Guard.
I love Charlize Theron action films.
Who does not?
Right.
Let's be honest.
All right.
All right. Nice. Thanks so much for joining us today. My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
And this has been The Soundboard.
Hot damn!
Because that's how good The Rock is.
Wow.
Okay. With that, we'll catch you next time. See ya. $136 million long. The budget was $75 million. And oh, sorry.
What the fuck?
It's my mum's ringtone.
Really? I thought you were busting a segment now. Go ahead, leave this in.
Hello, mum.